Hi, my name's Paul Grogan, and welcome to episode 50 of the All New Gaming Rules podcast. This episode is an audio version of the Games of the Month video log for July 2023. A big thank you to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible, and if you like the content that I create and you want to support me directly, you can do so at patreon.com/gamingrules. And now, on with the show. I'm actually recording this on Tuesday evening. What day is it? It's the 1st of August. And I'm hoping to get this video edited before the weekend. We'll see if I've got time. Because something's happening in a few days' time, which is keeping me quite busy. I'll talk about that later on. So in this video log, I'm going to be talking about all of the games that I've been playing since the last video log. So this covers a period from the 3rd of July through to the 31st of July. And I'll talk about all of the games that I've been playing. And then we'll cover all of the other usual stuff. I'll give you a Patreon update, I'll tell you what's coming up in the next week, and I'll tell you what's coming up in the next month as well. As always, a big thank you to all of my Patreon supporters for funding this video. I don't get any sponsorship for this video. All of the advertising revenue goes to charity, so I'm only able to create these videos thanks to the support of the Patreon. And if you want to support me directly and help me continue to make videos like this and other videos as well, you can do so at patreon.com/gamingrules. Right. Shall we kick off with the first game that I played in the period from the 3rd of July to the 31st of July is Aeon Trespass Odyssey. And I may be talking about this for some time. In fact, I've played it four times in July. I played it on the 4th, the 12th, the 18th and the 25th. So for those of you that missed last month's video log, I have agreed with the publisher of Aeon Trespass Odyssey, which is a company called Into the Unknown. I've agreed with them that I'm going to be doing a series of tutorial videos for them at some point. Don't expect these to drop in the next week or two. In fact, don't expect these to drop in the next month or two. This is a massive piece of work, which I am going to be fitting in around all of the other work that I've got scheduled. So what that means is that I'm not able to just say, right, I'm now going to focus on this and it'll be done in a couple of months. I'm going to do a bit on it, but then I've got another project booked in. Then I'll get back to this one. I should be getting these videos done. I mean, I don't know exactly when they're going to be done, because when I agreed to take on this project, I was just dipping my toe into the lake that is Aeon Trespass Odyssey and seeing just how big this game is. Now that I've played it a few times, I've got a good idea of how complex the game is and how to structure the video. So I don't quite know yet. I need to get this week out of the way. I need to get the Voidfall video out of the way, and then I can start to concentrate on this. But anyway, enough about that. That's all future stuff. We've been playing it. So we played it four times, and we were actually due to play it tonight, but I had to cancel tonight because I'm behind on other stuff. But yes, loving it. Basically, you could just say loving it and that's it. But this game is a complex game. Okay, this is a beast of a game. It is a massive epic campaign game that boasts 500 hours of gameplay, that it's got a lot of rules. It does have a lot of rules, and a lot of those rules are very complex, and there's a lot of stuff going on, but the narrative and the story that the game tells is superbly written from the bits that I've seen so far, and we've just been touching, you know, just the tip of the iceberg. So I've got the current version of the game, which is cycles 1 to 3. There's going to be 5 cycles in the end, and 4 and 5, I think, are coming out next year. But I've got cycles 1, 2, and 3. And each cycle apparently takes anywhere between 75 and 150 hours to play, depending on how many times you have to replay battles, depending on which routes you go, etc., etc., etc. So it's a massive amount of game. We are on cycle 1, obviously, and we have just finished story number 1. So there are 4 stories in there, and we've just finished story number 1. So we are probably about, I don't know, about 16 hours in, something like that. And it's going okay, but depending on how many battles you have, the actual overall progression of the campaign will slow down. So for example, the entire campaign for cycle 1 is an 80-day campaign max. If you get to day 18, you haven't succeeded, then it's over and you failed. So I don't know, maybe you'll, I don't know what the quickest time you can do it in. Because of course, if you know the game and you know exactly where to go and the right choices to make, you could probably do it a lot quicker. But I'm assuming we're going to be playing it for maybe 70 days, 75 days. Now, well, you could have a battle. The battle takes you about 2 hours to resolve. And then you could have 5 or 6 days of exploring and narrative and story and choices. Or you could end up with 3 battles back to back all on the same day. So it isn't just a case of every time you play the game in a standard game session, you're going to cover about 5 or 6 days. That's what we were doing for the first couple of sessions. But now we're in a period where we're about to get attacked by the Primordial, and we're about to get attacked, and there was a surprise attack that I can't talk about because of spoilers. But at the end of story 1B, for those people who know the campaign. And then there's the Pursuer that we're going to have a battle with as well. So we're going to end up with a series of battles without the timeline actually progressing. Anyway, it's a beast of a game, and I started playing it for 2 reasons. First of all, if I'm going to be covering this game in a professional capacity, as in I'm going to be creating the how-to-play videos for the game, I need to learn the game. And this is the kind of game where you learn the game best by doing. I read through the rulebook a couple of times, and I read the tutorial a couple of times, and then we sat down and we played our first game, and we were like, wait a minute, a titan's been knocked back into a column. What does that do? Well, the column is destructible and it's an obstacle. Let's look at the rules for obstacles. Oh, right, okay. Now let's look at the rules for destructible. You're going to have that. This is a complex game with a huge amount of stuff going on. And as you start playing the game for the first time, you're going to be like, wait a minute, what do we do in this situation? And that's just a process that you go through. Now, once you've been through that process and you remember things, it does flow a lot easier. And now that we're five or six sessions in, it is starting to flow a lot easier. I do want to give a big shout out to the Discord community. They have their Discord server, and I have a window open every time we're playing the game. And if we have a rules question that I can't work out the answer to, and a special shout out as well to John Sullivan and other of my Patreon supporters, because what we're doing is we're actually streaming these live, but these are not videos that are public on the channel. And that's because I'm going around to Rick and Victoria's house. We're setting a webcam up on top of the TV, and we're basically broadcasting that. So it's really not good quality. It is very much a fly on the wall, behind the scenes video of Paul playing Aeon Trespass Odyssey. That's why the videos are not on the public channel. But people have been helping out who know the game, who've been watching along, but also the Discord community is great. You go on there, you ask rules questions, and you get usually the right answers. So we've been gradually going through it, but I have to say that I am absolutely loving it. I'm enjoying the battles a lot more than I expected, because they are intense, and I feel like I need to take some kind of relaxing or Valium or something when I get home from a session, because it's so intense, it's so on the edge. But also the narrative and the evolving story, I am absolutely hooked. I think it's great. I think it's well written. I think the story so far is just fascinating. And considering that I played through the first Tainted Grail campaign and absolutely immersed myself in that world and loved the narrative, I'm getting the same vibe from this one. And that's the bit that I can't wait to just explore more. I'm really gutted that I had to cancel tonight. The battles, that's where a lot of the rules questions come in about, well, what happens in this particular situation? And you're going to be fighting a whole different series of bosses, each of which have their own special rules, which you're going to have to look up. A lot of the rules are very intuitive. Once you get used to them, and once you understand, you know, what the mechanisms are trying to tell you and what the mechanisms are. But because they've thrown so much into this game to add the huge amounts of replayability and variability, it does mean that there is a massive amount of content, and you are going to be looking stuff up now and again. The other thing about the combat is, you know, I'm a hardcore Euro gamer, but this game can be, the battles certainly, very, very swingy. There is dice for combat, so it is output randomness in terms of when you attack somebody, you're rolling dice. Whether somebody's attacking you, you're rolling dice to try and dodge it. So there is dice in this game. Okay, that's one thing. Now, I've come to accept dice in games, and the fact that it's a cooperative game and we're all in it together, that alleviates some of my fears of that. But also, the game has quite a bit of swinginess, and I'm not saying this in a bad way. I'm just saying this in a descriptive way in terms of the trauma card. So whenever you get hit in combat, you draw a card from a trauma deck. And there are different trauma decks depending on how much danger you've taken at that point, and they get progressively more dangerous as it goes on. But those cards, I mean, you know, Rick's infamous drawing of the disemboweled card, which is basically you draw the card, and this is from the Grave Trauma deck, so it's the third trauma deck. You've already quite badly beaten up. You draw the card and it says you die. And that's it. Your character is gone. But it's not your actual character. It's the Titan that you're controlling. Anyway, or there is another card in that deck, which is like Heroic Life, which is like, oh, okay, well, you're about to die, but actually you've got a spurt of life, a burst of energy. You get a free attack on the Primordial. You're like, oh, wow, yeah, okay, I get a free attack. And if you manage to wound it, then you heal and you're back to life and you're all right. It's like, oh, okay. So that's where absolute hardcore Euro gamers, which I am one of those, but because my tastes are fairly eclectic these days and I branch out and I enjoy other games as well. Thor's coming. Are you not happy, Thor? He's been shut in because it's raining and he's just complaining. So if you can hear a wailing baby in the background, that's not a baby. That's Thor, who's acting like a baby. Anyway, what was I saying? The swinginess of these cards in combat is something that if you are a pure Euro gamer and don't like branching out to different styles of games, you might have a problem with that. For me, though, and for us, because it's a cooperative game, and if your character dies, it's actually not your character. It's the Titan that you're controlling. So if the Titan dies, okay, you've lost a Titan. Cross one off the list. But, you know, if you get some really bad draws, it can mean the combat goes one way. But that doesn't mean the campaign's over. It's not like, oh, you lose a combat and the campaign's over. It's just one of those things. But every time we've played this game, in the last month, it is the game which has caused the most intense feelings. And then the last time we played, we could not believe. We were fighting this boss. And the fight wasn't going badly. Now, this is a fight against a very, very big boss, without trying to give too many spoilers away, that you're not going to be able to defeat. It's basically, it's a boss that you're not going to be able to defeat. And it turns up and we're like, okay, so we're going to lose this fight. We know we're going to lose this fight. And oh, we can't run away from this fight. Okay, well, okay, so we win this fight by scoring 4 wounds, which is not normally what you need. You normally need to score 10 wounds to kill the monster. So we need to get 4 wounds on the monster, and that classes as a win because we've hit it enough and then we get a chance to run away. So when I say we can't win the combat, we can actually win the combat by scoring 4 wounds. What I'm saying is we can't defeat the monster at this point in the campaign. So we're 2 Titans down. We've got 2 Titans left. I've drawn a card, which means that I've become fused with my Titan. So my Argonaut, who is controlling my Titan through this helmet, I've become fused with my Titan, which means if I die, my Titan dies, I also die. And that is my character. And we're like, oh, right. We've got 2 wounds on it. We're 2 Titans down. We've got these despair tokens all over the place, which means we're finding it really hard to hit. And basically, we were like, this is game over. We cannot do this. And then Victoria, yet again, got another extremely lucky hit. So the dice just fell absolutely right. We got a critical hit, which is a 1 in 10 chance. And then we managed to wound it. And it turns out that the card that we drew, the critical hit was, this counts as a wound, and you get 1 extra wound. And suddenly we're all there going, we're just absolutely stunned. Like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my, this is just incredible. And this is kind of, I came back after that session and I posted on Slack and I said, I'm now selling all of my Euro games because nothing has given me this amount of intense excitement and tension and everything else. And it was just, it's great. And I'm really glad that I've learned to accept a wider variety of games, because I do like my resource management, worker placement, no random element, spend 3 wood, get 2 points kind of thing. I like those games. But there are other games out there that can be enjoyed, and this is definitely one of them. Anyway, I've spoken a lot about this, but that's because it is my, probably one of my most enjoyable games that I've played in the last month, and I can't wait to play it more. And I will be playing it again next week. And if you're a patron supporter of mine, then every week I do send out a link so that you can watch these videos either as we are playing them live or you can watch them back afterwards. Just bear in mind, it is a webcam on top of a TV and that's it. So it isn't my normal studio setup. Right, moving on. On the 6th of July and on the 7th of July, and I've got here twice, and also I think I did a solo playthrough on the 19th of July, Hoplomachus Remastered. Now, I've had Hoplomachus Remastered since Essen last year. I've had it for, what, 7 months, 8 months? I can't even count. 9 months? And it's been really bothering me that I've not had a chance to play it. And you might be watching this video thinking, hang on a minute, Paul, you brought a game back from Essen and you've not played it in 9 months. Don't you have a normal job? Isn't your job just playing games? Yes, it is. But not just playing games, and I've got a lot of games to cover. So trust me, I feel bad about this because the game, everybody said how great this game was, and I've been really wanting to play it. And whilst I have played Hoplomachus Victorum a couple of times, I hadn't had a chance to dive into Hoplomachus Remastered. Anyway, it was the 6th or the 7th of July. I think I did a practice run on the, that was it. JP from the Who's Tony's It Anyway podcast gave up his evening on the 6th of July and we played a practice two-player game of it. Then on the 7th of July, Rob Turner came round and we played two games of it. So we played the skirmish mode, which is 1v1. So Hoplomachus Remastered is from Chip Theory Games. It is a game about gladiatorial combat. There's multiple ways to play. There is a solo mode. Excuse me. And there's two different solo modes as well. There's the skirmish mode where you can play 1v1. There's a team mode where you can play 2v2. There's all sorts of different modes in the game. And we played the 1v1 game and you choose one of the factions and you basically fight it. And there's unique special abilities and things like that. And yeah, I've been really wanting to play this game for such a long time and I'm really glad that I actually have. And as I say, then on the 19th, I did a solo playthrough. These are on the channel. So if you are interested in seeing a two-player playthrough of Hoplomachus Remastered, that is on the channel on the 7th of July. And then the solo playthrough is on the 19th of July. Now, these videos were not sponsored. I have done some sponsored videos for Chip Theory Games in the past. And they did give me this as a review copy of the game. But these playthroughs were not sponsored in any way. So that means I can be completely honest about my feelings for the game, and it was really good. Now, Chip Theory Games, Too Many Bones, Cloud Spire, Burn Cycle are the ones that I'm thinking of. They are all massive, epic, complex, long games. Hoplomachus is not. Hoplomachus is so smooth and so streamlined. And a game takes about an hour. Certainly the skirmish mode that we played. It takes about an hour to an hour and a quarter. It is definitely a Chip Theory Games game. You can tell that because of the design and the way, not just the physical components, but the way that it's designed and the way that things work together. But it has such a low rules overhead compared to their other games, such a low playtime compared to their other games. And in their other games, one of the disadvantages of Too Many Bones, Cloud Spire and Burn Cycle is you're going, how does this work? How does that work? Having to look up rules, having to query things, you don't really have to do that with Hoplomachus Remastered or Victorum. It's all, well, maybe a bit with Victorum, but certainly with Remastered. As I say, it was all smooth. It all played quite well. So yeah, really enjoyed it. Very, very much want to play that more. And now that I have played it and I know that it is a lot more accessible than maybe I first thought, then yeah, I'm looking forward to playing more of that. That's Hoplomachus Remastered. Next up, on the 8th, Vicky went out with her family and had a hen do. At which point, I was like, oh, right, well, if you're going out and having your hen do, maybe I can meet up with Malcolm and Alex and we can play Star Wars Outer Rim that I've been wanting to play with them for about 2 years. So I did. So Malcolm is what's going to be my brother-in-law and Alex is his son, what's going to be my nephew. As far as I'm concerned, he kind of is already my brother-in-law and Alex is already my nephew, but technically they're not, but they will be soon. Anyway, yeah, we played a three-player game of it. Now, I've spoken about Star Wars Outer Rim a number of times on this channel. I absolutely love the game. There's something about this game which is just, every single time I play it, I love it. I love the theme, I love the setting, I love the mechanisms of the game. I think the way that it's all put together, I just love so much about the way that it works. And I know it's got some randomness in it. It has the dice for resolution on some of the skill tests. But every single game tells its own little... it has its own emerging narrative. So there's a little bit of flavor text on every card, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the fact that you have these situations and you have these stories. And we played a three-player game of it, and it took us about 5 hours because they'd not played before, so I was explaining the rules as we went. IG88 won. Malcolm was playing IG88, and he managed to win in the end. I was playing Hondo Tanaka, I think he's a character from the Clone Wars. And yeah, it was just great. There were so many good things about this game that I love. And yeah, every time I play it, like I said, it's fantastic. One of the best parts of this game was I got a job to do the Kessel Run. So the Kessel Run requires certain skills in order for the Kessel Run to be successful. And one of the skills that's required to do the Kessel Run is piloting. And it just so happens we'd found Han Solo. Han Solo was hanging about on Naboo, and I was like, oh, well, if I can go to Han Solo and I can recruit him, then he can become a member of my crew and he's got the piloting skill. That's going to really help me do the Kessel Run. But there was a Hutt patrol in the way. Now, in this game, if you have a neutral or negative reputation with a particular faction and you try to move through their space, you have to stop. And in fact, if you're negative, you have to fight them. So I was like, oh, right, well, in order for me to get past that patrol quickly, I need to be friends with the Hutts. So I did another little job somewhere else where I was like, okay, if I do this job, if I smuggle some goods, I'm going to get a bit of money and I'm going to become friends with the Hutts. So I did. So my reputation with the Hutts was positive. Right, now I need to go and get Han Solo. Went to Han Solo, read the card again. It was like, if you have negative reputation with the Hutts, Han Solo attacks you. And I was like, oh, no. And it was just one of these moments that, you know, it's not random. It was all there. I knew that. I just forgot to read the card. And it was hilarious. It was really, really good. Anyway, I had a bit of a fight with Han Solo and he beat me. So I lost a turn. And then I went back to him and had another fight with him, beat him, and then went, oi, you, get on board my ship. And then IG88 won the game before I'd managed to do the Kessel Run. But anyway, it was a great game. That wasn't streamed because it was done round at Malcolm's house. But on the 28th of July, just recently, and this is on the channel, I did another solo playthrough. Now, if you search through my channel over the years, you will find that I've done 3 or 4 solo playthroughs of the game. And I did another one last week because my patron supporters voted. So I had a capacity last week to do... Was it last week? Yeah, it was last week. It was only a few days ago. Wow, time's flown. Yeah, it was last Friday. I basically put a Patreon poll up and said, look, which of these solo games do you want me to play? And Star Wars Outer Rim and Great Western Trail got tied number of votes. So I went over to a Facebook group, Board Games for One, and I put the poll on there and I said, look, do you want to see Great Western Trail or Star Wars Outer Rim? And it was Star Wars Outer Rim won by one vote. So yeah, it was very, very close between the two of them. I would have been happy to play either of them. But I've done a solo playthrough on the 28th. That's on the channel now. I was playing IG88 and I was playing against Han Solo. I chose the characters at random. I won't spoil it by telling you what happened, but it was a fun game. And yeah, that's on the channel if you want to go and watch it. That wasn't a sponsored video. So I did get a copy of Star Wars Outer Rim from Asmodee UK when it came out. But all of the videos that I've done for that game, none of them have been sponsored in any way. So yeah, there you go. On the 9th of July... And this isn't on the channel. This is Lord of the Rings Journeys in Middle-earth. Our campaign continued. We are meeting up with Mark and Sally on average once a month. But it's been a while since we last played. We got together and we were like, what are we doing again? And we're still on the first campaign, which I've played before. And in fact, I've streamed the entire campaign of Lord of the Rings Journeys in Middle-earth. So if you are interested in it, I have covered it on the channel in the past. But again, similar to Star Wars Outer Rim, this is a game which I very much enjoy playing. It's by Fantasy Flight Games, same as Star Wars Outer Rim. It's another of my favourite themes, Lord of the Rings, and it's a cooperative game and it just works really well. We are playing on the adventure mode, which we're finding a little bit too easy. And I'm due to have a discussion with the others to say, look, I think we should not be playing on this mode anymore. Now, you can't actually change the mode of play once you've started the campaign, but... One of the things that adventure mode gives you is it gives you a free inspiration every round. And I'm going to propose that we just carry on playing, but we don't get that free inspiration. Because we're finding, at the moment, it's not really a challenge. We've played the last two or three scenarios and we've won them easily and hardly taken any damage. And we always have enough inspiration to pass any tests. And it just seems a little bit too easy. But anyway, we're playing through Lord of the Rings Journeys in Middle-earth. We're probably about three quarters of the way through the first campaign and we're all really enjoying it. We also played that day a quick game of The Number. So what happened is we played Lord of the Rings, we played a scenario in the afternoon, and then as Vicky went off to go and cook dinner, we played a quick game of The Number, which is the game from Repos Productions that I picked up this year, but it actually came out in 2020. I quite like it, but I only like it because it's 10 minutes. This is nowhere near in the same category as Just One and So Clover. But it's by the same company, and I got it because I thought, oh, is this going to be another fun party game like the other two? And it's not, even though it is fun and it's quick, it's not in the same league as the other two whatsoever. And I've spoken about this before, and it's the basic principle is you've got to write a number, a three-digit number on your card, then all of the numbers are sort of laid out in a line, and then in numeric order, and then you go from highest to lowest, and if you've used a digit on your number which has been used elsewhere, then yours gets removed. But you always go highest to top. So if the lead player, if the person who put the highest number writes a number which was included in a lower one, then that lead one is removed, but then the lower one might survive. It's only if there's numbers below it which it duplicates with. And then you score points based on something else. It's fun, it's quick, it works okay. It does have the element of, oh, I've got to try and guess what the other players might do. And ultimately, you have bits of information because once you've used a number, you can't use it again for that round. But sometimes you're just trying to guess what the other people have put. So anyway, that's The Number. Moving on to the 11th of July, I played a game of Hamlet by the Lake. Now, Hamlet by the Lake is an expansion set for Hamlet, which was a successful game from Mighty Boards, which I've already covered on the channel. But because I've covered it on the channel and I have a relationship with Mighty Boards, they contacted me and said, Paul, we're going on Kickstarter with an expansion set for Hamlet. Do you want to cover it? And I said, absolutely yes, because we quite liked Hamlet when we played it. So that is on the channel now. That was a sponsored playthrough. So I'm not going to be, you know, I'm not going to be as open about my thoughts on the game as I have been with the other games that I've talked about today. Other than it does make Hamlet a better game, which is what you kind of would expect and you would want from an expansion. It does fix a couple of issues that some people have had with the base game. I specifically didn't have those issues with the base game, but I can see those issues and other people might have had those issues with them. But that playthrough is on the channel. We did a three-player game. JP came over, Stuart came over, and it's there. I think the Kickstarter has actually closed for it now. You can probably get it at some point later on if you're interested. But yeah, if you looked at Hamlet initially or played it and weren't keen on it or wanted to have another look at it with this new By the Lake expansion where you get to go fishing, then check that out. That's on the channel. Later that evening, JP stayed. We had dinner and then we played Voidfall. Now, I don't know how much to talk about Voidfall at the moment because I've been working really hard for the last 3 or 4 weeks pretty solidly on the Voidfall How to Play video. And as of about 8 hours ago, cross fingers, it's finished. I'm going to wait another day just in case somebody else looks at it and sees anything that's wrong with it. But cross fingers, it is done. But yeah, JP came over. JP loves the game. He's played it before. I've played it before. And we did a two-player playthrough. Now, because I'm producing sponsored content for Voidfall in the future, I didn't feel comfortable in making this a public stream. So this was a Patreon-only stream, which is on the channel now. If you're a Patreon supporter, you would have been sent a link on the 11th of July to watch me and JP play through it. And if you think, oh, well, that's not fair, Paul, why are you not making your playthroughs available to the public? We got some rules wrong. And that's because I was still in the process of learning the game in order to... Well, no, in fact, that was on me. I'd already learned the game. I knew the game. I'd written the script for the How to Play video. But then in the actual playthrough that we did, we got a couple of rules wrong. And that's why I don't want that video on my public channel. because people will go and watch that one instead of the one that I'm going to do next week, which will hopefully have the right rules. So anyway, that's on there now. If you are a Patreon supporter, it's there if you want to go and watch it. But I am going to be doing a proper sponsored three-player playthrough next week. So just hang fire for a minute and it will be coming. What do I think of Voidfall? Again, Mindclash Games are one of my clients. They make games that are absolutely fantastic. And Voidfall, I am professionally involved in the project. I have been commissioned to create the how to play video, a multiplayer playthrough, and also a solo playthrough, which I'm going to be doing with Mark Dainty at some point later in August. If you are somebody who thinks that I am influenced on my personal opinions about games, whether I'm professionally involved in them or not, then you might want to switch off for the next 30 seconds, because I'm going to tell you exactly what I think about Voidfall. I'm going to cross that line, because that line is, if you are professionally involved in a game, you should not really disclose your personal feelings about it, because people might not believe you. So if you're one of those people, switch off now, come back in about a minute's time. Okay, if you're still with me, and this is my honest opinion, irrespective of the fact that I was professionally involved and commissioned to make the videos, this is my number one game of this year, and I cannot see anything knocking it off that. Although, the year is only halfway through, and there are a couple of games coming out this year at Essen which look exactly like my kind of game. So, right now, it is my number one game of this year. It is also easily in my top 10 games of all time, and possibly in my top 5. There you go. Welcome back to all of the people who skipped ahead a minute. Next up, 14th of July, and this video is on the channel if you want to go and watch it. We played Dungeons & Dragons Trials of Tempest. In fact, we did two playthroughs that day, one in the afternoon to learn how to play the game, and then another one in the evening. Now, Dungeons & Dragons Trials of Tempest, this was a sponsored video from WizKids Games. WizKids are the publishers of this game. We're game. WizKids are one of my clients. And yeah, they wanted me to do a video on this game. It's being released soon, I think. I think it's going to be out at Gen Con. And I think it's going to be available just after Gen Con. But this is a fairly big, meaty game. And I think it's like $100 for the base game or $200 for the deluxe version, which has painted miniatures in there. Now, the painted miniatures are gorgeous. The painted miniatures are really, really good. Years ago, when WizKids started doing painted miniatures, they were a bit, they were all right, but they weren't very good. Now, their painted miniatures are very, very good. I mean, I looked at the paint jobs on these miniatures and I was like, wow, these are really, really good. So, yeah, that's what you're paying for with the deluxe version. There's a lot of game in there. There's a lot of cards. There's a lot of components. There's a lot going on. It is a team-based game for 4 to 8 players, where basically the heroes are sent in and they're doing quests and they're fighting monsters. They're essentially trying to get victory points, but it's all done with a D&D theme. So it's a good blend of Euro mechanisms and a bit of dice rolling in the way that you've got cards and you choose which actions you're going to do, but then which action you do, you roll dice, it's D20s to see how it works out. But yeah, it's quite an interesting game. You will have to check out the playthrough to see how it plays. We were 4 players. Now, one of the things that I do have to say about the game is that it did seem to have a scaling issue. So in the week before I did the live stream, I was watching some videos from other reviewers and reading some articles from other reviewers, and suddenly they were flagging alarm bells with me. So I contacted WizKids and I said, look, I'm doing the live playthrough this Friday in like 3 days' time, and I'm reading all of these reports from what other reviewers are saying about the game. What should I do? And we agreed with WizKids that they sent me a set of variant rules, which I think they're going to be making official, which basically scales the monster. Because there's a boss monster at the end, but the health of that monster doesn't change no matter how many players you have in the game. So if you're an 8-player game, in other words, 2 teams of 4, then you're getting loads and loads of attacks on the boss for every attack it's getting on you. Whereas if you're only a 4-player game, 2v2, you're not going to be getting that many attacks on the boss. So it didn't seem to scale. I think they've acknowledged this now. I'm not sure, quite sure, you know, how that got through development or whatever, But it's an easy fix, and they gave me this fix, and I used that fix in the video, and we did actually defeat the boss in the video. So yeah, it's an interesting game where you're trying to get victory points by doing these quests and all sorts of stuff, but there's lots of D&D stuff going on, which is really nice, and a lot of the abilities that you're using, if you don't know D&D, that's absolutely fine. It's not a role-playing game as such, so it is just a board game. But if you know D&D, then you'll know what some of the abilities actually do, and it kind of gives it a bit more enjoyment. Anyway, that video is on the channel, Dungeons & Dragons Trials of Tempest, if you're interested in that one. Next was a weekend where I went to Vicky's parents because it was her dad's birthday. And as usual, whenever I go around to their house, we normally play a few games. The games that I played was just one. We played that for a very long time on the Saturday night. We played So Clover once, I think. We played So Clover maybe once or twice. And I also played Welcome Back to the Dungeon. So I wanted to take... So Alex, as I mentioned, played Star Wars Outer Rim with him earlier on. He's just started playing D&D. And I thought, wait a minute, I've got Welcome Back to the Dungeon. It's like a 15-minute fantasy game. He's going to love this. I thought this would be great. So yeah, I took that. I've not played it for a couple of years, and it's really nice. Welcome Back to the Dungeon. I don't have Welcome to the Dungeon. I only have Welcome Back to the Dungeon, but it's a nice little push your luck game that doesn't, it's not a serious game in any way, but it actually works quite well. And what happens is each round of the game, one of the four adventurers is chosen who is going to go down the dungeon. And that adventurer starts with six pieces of equipment. And then the players take it in turns, go round and round the table. And on your turn, you can either pass, which means you're out for that round, or you draw a card from the deck. And then you've got two choices of what to do. You look at the card, you either add that card to the dungeon, which is making the dungeon harder, or you remove the card so that it doesn't get added to the dungeon, but the adventurer loses a piece of equipment. And basically what you're doing is you're kind of bidding-ish to stay in the round, because once all players but one have passed, the player who is left goes down the dungeon with all of the cards that have been put in and with the equipment that they've got left. So it plays a little bit like Perudo, if you know Perudo. At the start of the game, you're going, okay, I've drawn a card, I'm going to put it in the dungeon. Okay, next person, I've drawn a card, I put it in the dungeon. And eventually you're looking at it and you're thinking, okay, it's getting harder and harder and harder, but I don't want to drop out just yet because I think we'll be able to do it. And then you think, okay, I'm going to stay in, I'll draw another card. And then you go, oh, right, this is going to make it stupidly hard, but I'll put it in anyway in the hope that they don't pass. Because if they pass, you're going down the dungeon and you think, oh, I'm not going to do this. And then they say, oh, okay, I'm going to draw a card. And at which point you go, whew, and then you say, pass. And then suddenly they have to go down the dungeon. And then going down the dungeon is basically revealing the cards, trying to beat up the monsters, using the equipment that you've got left and things like that. And if you win, you get a point. If you get 2 points, you win the game. And that's it. But yeah, it's good fun. And I'm glad I've played it again. Next up, on the 20th of July, in fact, on the 20th of July... twice, and on the 21st of July, twice, and then on the 22nd of July, I played Barcelona. I played Barcelona 5 times in a 3-day period. So first of all, the Thursday, the designer himself, Danny Garcia, gave up his afternoon to teach me how to play the game. There is not a public mod available for the game on Tabletop Simulator, but Danny has one because he's the designer. So he kindly let me use that. And he taught me and some friends how to play the game. And that was me learning how to play Barcelona. Then, on the Thursday evening, I took the game to our local games club. And I taught some other people how to play Barcelona. And all of that was in preparation for a playthrough that I did on Friday, which was a solo playthrough. So I learned the multiplayer game. And I played that twice on the Thursday. Then on the Friday afternoon, I learned the solo mode. And I played the solo mode. And then on the Friday evening, I did a public stream where I showed off the solo mode. So if you're interested in seeing a solo playthrough of Barcelona, that is on my channel. It was on the evening of the 20th of July. And even if you're not interested in solo, I kind of explain how the multiplayer game works in that video. So yeah, if you're interested in the game, either solo or multiplayer, check out that. Now, that is a sponsored video. Board and Dice, again, they're one of my clients, and I love a lot of the games that they produce. And this one was getting so much buzz and so much hype that I actually contacted them about a month ago, 6 weeks ago, and said, do you want me to cover Barcelona? Because it looked really, really good. And they went, oh yeah, we've not asked you to cover Barcelona, have we? I'm like, no, you haven't. Do you want me to cover it? And they said, yes, please. So I was like, yeah, okay, great. So I did. And yeah, great game. Again, if you don't believe that I'm being honest with my opinions, then switch off for 30 seconds. But yeah, I wouldn't have played it five times if it wasn't great. Because I then went to the charity, 24-hour charity event run by Dan Apsey, raising money for Cots for Tots. And I took the game with me and I played it there. And yeah, it's really, really good. Everything that everybody had told me about the game was absolutely true. It's got a good pace to it. It's got interesting mechanisms. And one of the best bits about the game is it was 2 hours with a full teach for a 4-player game. It was great. It just ran really smoothly. It's probably a medium weight game. In fact, when I'm describing it to people, I say it's a medium weight game until you add on the rules for the tram. When you add on the rules for the tram, it knocks it up a point. It makes it a bit more of maybe a medium plus game. But yeah, really, really good game. Now, the solo game is a great solo mode. The solo mode is a little bit above my comfort level in terms of the complexity. Because I like my solo AIs relatively simple. This one is great. It's a really well-designed solo mode and it works very well. It's just a tiny bit above my comfort zone. I'd do it again, but only because the designer was there while I was learning the game and he was helping me understand it. The rules were clear. I just struggle sometimes with having to work out what the bot would do and going, well, where's it going to go? It's going to go there. But it is really well-designed. The only criticism I do have of the solo mode, and I have fed this back to the designer, is it was a bit too easy. So in that solo playthrough that I did, I played on the hard difficulty level, I think. It was either normal or hard. I think I played on hard, and I still beat it by 80 points. And I shouldn't be able to beat it on my second. I mean, I had played the game a few times in the last few days, but I think the solo mode balance is a little bit off. Now, that can easily be fixed, absolutely easily be fixed. You could just say it starts with 50 points or it starts with 60 points. Or in my case, I beat it by 80. Maybe I just played really well in that game. I'm not sure. But I don't think that I should be able to beat it by that many points on only my second game. So as I say, it's a really, really good solo mode. I'm not saying that the solo mode is rubbish and you can't play it. I'm just saying you might want to play with it. And you might want to make it more difficult by giving it a head start in terms of points. There are also some advanced variants in the back to make it harder, which I used one of those, but maybe I could have used more. But yeah, really, really good game. And like I said, solo playthrough is on the channel. Let's go back to that Thursday night. So that Thursday night, we played Barcelona in 2 hours, and then we had time to play some other things because the club normally lasts for about 3 hours. So we actually played a quick game of Cluster. Now, Cluster is, I remember when Cluster came out. Cluster is a fun game that you can play just in the pub or whatever. It's completely suitable for non-gamers. And basically the way Cluster works is it comes in a small bag or box and it's got a string. And what you do is you put the string on the table and you lay it out in a circle. And then the rest of the game is basically a whole series of magnets. And you divide the magnets between the players, and on your turn, you put a magnet somewhere inside the circle, and if it goes down and doesn't attract to anything else, then you're safe. But if it does attract to something else, you have to pick up all of the things that it attracted to. And the game didn't work. The game just didn't work. And I don't understand why the game didn't work. So let me tell you why it didn't work. We put the string down. We divided the stones between the three of us. We all put one down. Not a single person put one that was within magnetic range of anything else. So therefore, the player that went first won. That's not a game. So I don't know. Maybe over years, the magnets have lost their magnetism. Maybe we needed to make the ring smaller. So we played again. We made the ring a bit smaller and we played again. But a fourth person joined us. And what happened is, player one went, put a stone down. Player two went. We just went round. And your first few placements, you're not going to get anything touching anything else. But then I think Simon managed to put his so that it attracted something else. But that what that did is that meant he was out of the game effectively. And then it just left a big wide open space and the rest of us just went bum, bum, bum. The first player to put their last stone down wins. Either we're not playing the game correctly or the game just doesn't work. So if you've played Cluster, let me know what I'm doing wrong. Interestingly enough, Vicky went out with her work colleagues and they had Cluster. So, and they played it and they said exactly the same thing. So completely independently of me, a totally different group with their own copy of the game said the same thing about it. So yeah, it can't just be me. Anyway, we also played that night a 10-player game of Just One, which was hilarious. Basically, two or three groups that had finished at the same time, and we're like, what should we do? Should we play Just One? Well, I've only got my copy. Nick says, well, I've got my copy. Okay, we'll play a 10-player game of Just One. And 10-player Just One works really well. You do get duplicates. You always get two or three duplicates, but you still get four or five words through each time. And yeah, it's always good fun. Right, let's go back to the 24-hour charity event that I attended on the Saturday, the 22nd of July. I didn't stay for the full 24 hours because I can't do that anymore. But I stayed for pretty much most of the Saturday. I was there for about 14 hours on the Saturday. And I started off by playing Barcelona. So we had a 4-player game of Barcelona. Yeah, fantastic. As I say, it was 2 hours, including a full teach. So that went really well. Then after that, I played Sky Mines. Now, Photius had contacted me, one of my Patreon supporters, and said, look, I'm going to be going to the 24-hour charity event. Do you want to meet up and do you want to play a game together? And I said, yeah, I'll absolutely have to play a game. You know, and we'd agreed. And I played Barcelona with him and Elena in the morning. And Adrian as well from the Who's Tony's Anyway podcast. But then we got out Sky Mines. And I was like, well, we both like Sky Mines. We both played Sky Mines before. I've not played it for a while. Sky Mines is the re-implementation of Mombasa. And I played Sky Mines and I was reminded as to how good it was. Sky Mines might be probably the best game that I played that day. And probably, to be honest, I'm trying to judge on whether that or Star Wars Outer Rim, because Star Wars Outer Rim is just so enjoyable. Right, okay, in terms of a game, depends whether I'm in Euro mode or Star Wars mode. Sky Mines is such a good game. It's fantastic. I love it. I absolutely love Sky Mines. It's probably like a 9.5 out of 10 for me. Yeah, absolutely love it. Great game. And came last, I think, but doesn't matter. Still very, very, very good game. Yeah, I've probably spoken about Sky Mines before, and I think I've covered it on the channel. So if you are interested in Sky Mines and why Paul thinks it's so great, then check that out. But it's quite heavy. There's a lot going on, but the new version, Deep Print Games, has done a fantastic job with the production. It looks great. The decisions that you have in the game, the card play mechanism, the way that you're moving the different companies around, yeah, it's just fantastic. The downside of the game is that it doesn't really play that well with two players. However, this is the big change, one of the big changes anyway, from Mombasa to Sky Mines, is it comes with this Lunar Bot, and a Lunar Bot you can play it with solo, or you can use it to replace a missing player. So if you were a 3-player game, you could use the Lunar Bot to play the fourth player. You could even, if you had 3 Lunar Bot decks, you could play a solo game against 3 AI opponents. But very, very good. What else did I play that day? I played Cosmic Dragons, which is a game that my friend Rick has designed, who's been on the channel a number of times. It's a prototype. Rick has designed his own game called Cosmic Dragons, and that was my first time playing it. It's early days, but all credit to him. He's designed a game. He's got it printed out. He's got a prototype and he's been playing it with people, and that's a lot more than a lot of people are able to do. So yeah, good luck with that. It's a fun game. There's bits about it that I liked, and I've given Rick my feedback on the bits that I wasn't too keen on. But the idea of the game is that players are sort of heading along this area of space, and they're having encounters along the way, and they're upgrading their ship, and they're doing all sorts of stuff. And the idea is that you get to the other side and then you blow up the enemy base or something like that, I think. But when the ships meet in the middle, there is a combat between the two players. And you use your lasers and your missiles that you've been building up and things like that. So yes, got some interesting ideas in there. Next up, me and Rick played Marvel Champions. This was actually on the live stream. So Dan was live streaming all day on YouTube. He had a room upstairs set up for a studio. And I gave the hosts who were hosting the 24-hour show, I gave them a couple of hours break, and me and Rick played Marvel Champions. Now, Marvel Champions, I've spoken about this a number of times on the channel. Love the game. Think it's absolutely fantastic. Don't get to play it enough, which always pains me. But Rick built a couple of decks. I was playing... who was I playing? The Ironheart. That was it. I was playing Ironheart. Rick was playing... Can't remember. Cannot remember at all what Rick was playing. But we were playing one of the Mojo scenarios from the Mojo campaign expansion. And it was really good. What they've done with the game, what they're able to do with the mechanisms. And we were basically fighting in this arena. And you don't win this particular scenario by beating the boss. You win this game by getting the crowd on your side. So it's all about crowd favor and trying to do things that get the crowd and interested in this, that, and the other. And we had this epic game. And it was really a lot of fun. I mean, I love the game anyway, mechanically, but it was also a huge amount of fun to play this scenario. And we had a really interesting, the way that the game ended, it was in the middle of the villain's turn, I believe. And the villain attacked Rick, and Rick played some card to block. And that card got us the crowd favour, that won us the game. So we actually won the game in the middle of the villain's turn while he was busy attacking us, because we managed to... defend ourselves against it. It was just great. It was like, oh, we won. So yeah, Marvel Champions is good. To finish off the evening, we had a six-player game of Heat. I've never played Heat at six-player. This is Heat, Pedal to the Metal, the Formula One racing game from Days of Wonder that came out at Essen last year. Great game, but still, and I speak about this every time, it's always confusing. It's a great game, but it is quite fiddly to teach, and it is quite fiddly with the rules, because you're like, okay, so what does this stress, and it's the terminology. The terminology is the problem. This is a stress card. Why is it called a stress card? So what does that do? Well, you reveal these cards, and you can also boost. Well, what does a boost do? Well, boost does exactly the same thing as we, okay, so the stress card and a boost, they're both resolved in exactly the same way? Yeah, okay, and then you've got, you know, it's just every time I teach it, and, you know, It's always this problem with the game. And every time I talk about the game on these video logs, I always say the same thing. So let's move on. We drafted the upgrade cards. There were three or four new players in the game. So we just drafted the basic upgrade cards rather than the advanced ones. And we played the Italian map. I think we played the Italian map. But yeah, it was good fun. Then we played a couple of rounds of So Clover. And then to end the night, I convinced some people to stay late. And we played a couple of rounds of Stick'em, the little card game, where you're trying to stitch people up, is always a lot of fun. Also that night, so I haven't actually recorded this, but I've just remembered. So I left the 24-hour charity event at probably around 11:30 or something like that. Meanwhile, Vicky was out on her Wendu. So a Wendu is a works hen do, where basically she went out into Clumpton with a few of her colleagues from work, and they went for a few drinks, they went for food, and they went for a few drinks and everything else. Anyway, I got back home at gone midnight, and I saw that the light in the hobby room where all of the games are was on. And I thought, what's going on here? So I turned up and arrived back home, and I found that three people, Vicky and two of her work colleagues, were rooting through all of the games in my collection. They'd had a few drinks, and they'd come back here, and they wanted to play some fun games. So even though I was absolutely exhausted and wanted to come home and go to bed, we stayed up for the next couple of hours playing some silly fun games. We played Rainbow Rage, we played Stick'em, we played Categorical from the Wibble Plus Plus deck. I can't quite remember. I was barely functioning at this point. But yeah, played some more fun, silly games just to end the night or at the start of the morning, and then finally got to bed about 2:30. The 30th, I played a game called Ascendancy. Now, bit of a bad news story about this. I did a tabletop simulator playthrough with the designer, Andy from the Whose Turn Is It Anyway podcast, and Mike Dennis from Ready Steady Play. That video was supposed to be edited on the Monday, and then it would be released today, because Ascendancy is going live on Kickstarter on the 8th of August. And I'd agreed with the designer, Matthew, who contacted me and wanted me to cover the game, that I would be doing a playthrough video of the game ready for the Kickstarter. Unfortunately, I had some major technical issues and the recording was unusable. And I haven't had any opportunity, and I won't have any opportunity, to record another video before the campaign goes live. So I did play Ascendancy on the Sunday night. The video, as I say, is unusable, so you're not going to be able to see that playthrough. But I have agreed with Matthew that I am going to cover the game, and this time it's going to be with a physical copy of the game, physical prototype. So Tom Heath has covered the game. He's covered the solo mode of the game. And I think he's put that video up. If he hasn't, then that video will be going up soon. But we're going to be playing the competitive game, and we've scheduled it in for the middle of August. So unfortunately, that was the earliest I was able to fit it in. The campaign will be halfway through. Well, no, the campaign will be like a week in at that point. But I'm going to be covering it again. Now, Ascendancy is an epic, I can't remember exactly the words Matthew used to describe it, but he's like the ultimate 4X fantasy worker placement experience. I might have got it right. Which is a big tagline for a game. And we went into it and Matthew actually taught us how to play. So we all three of us went into the game not knowing much about it. And Matthew actually spent his time in teaching us gradually as we played through the game. And yes, there's definitely a worker placement aspect to it. But there is also expansion on the map. There's also fighting. The fascinating thing with this game is there's so many different modes of play. As I mentioned, Tom is covering the solo mode. There's an adventure mode. There's a cooperative mode. There's a team-based mode. There's a hidden team-based mode. There's an everyone for themselves mode. There's all sorts of different modes. This game is so customizable. And there's even within, like the version we played, you can choose to turn on PvP or turn off PvP. It all depends on, you know, what your particular group want in terms of their playstyle. But anyway, yeah, we played that and we all enjoyed it. So it's actually not a problem that I'm going to get to play it again because I'm going to look forward to it. But when I went into that game, and if you are interested in the game, check out the Kickstarter when it goes live. In fact, you can look for it now and get notified. But when we first saw the game and I saw all of this stuff all over the place and Matthew started explaining it, I was like, whoa, this is a Sunday night. This is going to be massively complicated. I'm not going to be able to take all of this in. And then gradually, as we started playing it, every bit that we did actually felt really smooth and intuitive. So yes, there's a worker placement part of the game and there are four phases and you have these four workers. And in phase one of the game, which is the frontier phase, phase one of each round, and a round is like a decade. So you do the frontier phase and you've got your outcast worker. It's your lowest, least powerful worker, but your outcast worker can only go and work in the frontier. So you've got to use it. You want to use it for the frontier phase, otherwise you can't use it in any other ones. But you could use your other workers as well. And you can have people ousting other workers. So a laborer could come along and it could oust one of the outcasts and do that action instead. The problem is, you then get to phase two and your labor has already been used. So you could use your next one up, but then you wouldn't do the next phase. So that's quite interesting in how that works. But essentially, you've got these four phases in the game and each phase fits to one of the different X's in the 4X, like the expand, exploit, exterminate, and explore. And the frontier phase is about exploring, scouting the land, finding stuff, but you can also construct buildings as well that then other people can use. Then you've got the next phase, which I can't remember what it's called. But anyway, yeah, it was good. And then you've got the map and you're sort of expanding your empire on the map. And then you're conquering towns, you're fighting monsters and things like that. It all hung together really well. And we all really enjoyed it and want to play more. And I will be playing more next month. Right, that is the end of all of the games that I've played that were live with other people round a table. Online gaming. Every month I talk about the games that I've been playing online, and there is less of them this month because I've taken a little bit of a break from online gaming. And this kind of happened because I was playing in probably about 8 or 9 online games at any one time. And whilst it wasn't taking up that much of my time, because I'll do like a turn here and there, I was getting involved in doing the Voidfall video. So I deliberately decided to start wrapping up the games that I was involved in And right now, as of this moment, I am currently not involved in any games on Board Game Arena at the moment. I will be starting them back up again next week, once I've got through everything that's going on this week. But in the last month, the games that have finished for me were Caverna, which was a five-player game, which was really good to play Caverna, because I love the game, I think it's great. Ark Nova and War Chest, game three in our War Chest tournament, and I won that one. I've also played another game of Terraforming Mars using the hero cap thing, whatever it is. So they're the games that I've played online in the last few weeks. And as I say, none at the moment going on, but I'll be getting back to that next week. Just wanted to say a big thank you to the Slack community that I have on my Slack channel, which is for Patreon supporters. There is an online gaming channel and people are creating new games all the time and people are joining those games all the time and I see it. And sometimes a game has started and I think, oh yeah, quite fancy joining that. It's already full. It's just really nice to see all of my Patreon supporters all around the world, all playing games with each other on Board Game Arena. And these games aren't live. These aren't two people or sat there at the same time playing the game. These are all asynchronous games that are being played. So yeah, really, really great to see that. So thank you very much for giving me good feelings by just going on and creating these games and me seeing other people joining in is great. Other content that has been on the channel in the last few weeks. Well, I've done a live painting stream. So my first public live painting stream was with Elle Firespray, who invited me onto her channel. She has a Twitch channel and a YouTube channel, and she live streams painting on Twitch. And I'm going to put links to that in the description of this video if you want to go and check that out. But I started painting one of the miniatures from Aeon Trespass Odyssey, which is... The miniatures are fantastic. The miniatures are so good. The sculpts are really good. And I really wanted to start painting these miniatures. But I had to contact Into the Unknown and said, look, I'm going to be creating some official tutorial videos for your game. In those official tutorial videos, we shouldn't be using painted miniatures because people will get a false impression thinking, oh, it comes with painted miniatures. No, it doesn't. And I said, if you're okay with me starting to paint the miniatures, would you be able to send me some replacements for when I then film the video? Which I can send back to you afterwards, but I will need unpainted miniatures to film the video with. And they said, yes, absolutely, not a problem. Which ones will you be painting? I said, I don't know. So hang fire. And when I need them, I will ask you for them. But yes, we painted for a couple of hours. I was happy with how much I'd accomplished in those 2 hours. Since then, I've done another couple of hours on it, probably maybe 2 or 3 hours on it. I'm going to put a picture on screen now. This is as it is at the moment. It's not finished yet, but this is how it's looking at the moment. And I'm really happy with it. I paint to... My painting is such that I wish I was better. And when I look at pictures of everything that other people painted, I'm like, oh, I really wish I was that good of a painter. But ultimately, am I happy with what I've painted here? I'm very happy with it. I'm really happy with how this looks. So yeah, this is the Labyrinthaurus from Aeon Trespass Odyssey, which is one of the primordials that you are fighting. And we fought this once. It's basically an armored bull with a parasite that's been living inside it that's sort of ripping out. And it goes around trampling all over the board and causing absolute mayhem. So I did that. Thank you very much to Elle for inviting me onto that stream. And as I say, I'll put the links in the description if you want to watch that video. I've also done an unboxing video of Voidfall. That is on the channel now. Which has had, as of this afternoon, 3,500 views, which is almost double what my How to Play Marrakesh video did. If you are one of the people who thinks, oh, why do people bother making unboxing videos and why do people bother watching unboxing videos? My live stream unboxing video of Voidfall, which took no preparation whatsoever, has had more views than a video that took me 40 hours to create. That's how it is. But I enjoy doing those. It's a live unboxing. It's a bit of fun. It takes me about an hour and a half to prep everything and do everything else. But yeah, I enjoy doing them. And earlier on today, I did a live unboxing of Castles of Burgundy Special Edition. So two live unboxing videos if you're interested in those on the channel. And what else? I did some playthroughs. These were Patreon only. because it was late one night, but I've been playing a little bit of a computer game called Roguebook. It was free on Amazon Games a couple of weeks ago, and somebody told me about it and said, oh, it's a bit like Slay the Spire, but with some permanency. And I thought, oh, okay, quite like Slay the Spire. And I loaded Roguebook up, and I really enjoy it. I think it's, I prefer it to Slay the Spire. I really like the way that the game is put together. And I've played it a few times, and I decided to do a live stream for my Patreon supporters. It ended up getting split into three parts, because I basically just played a bit here and a bit there whenever I had time. But yeah, that was good to play. Right, coming up over the next few days. Well, tomorrow night, I say tomorrow night, it's tomorrow night in my world. But the reality is, this video is probably not going to get released until Thursday or even Friday morning. I might actually make this video live, public, Friday morning. My aim is to make this video live for Patreon supporters on the Thursday, or maybe even tomorrow. So yeah, I'll get this video up at some point late in the week. Maybe I will release it on Friday morning. So I'm recording this on the Tuesday, but it'll probably go live to the public on the Friday morning. So for me, tomorrow night, but for you, already on the channel, Castles of Burgundy, solo playthrough with the Vineyards expansion. I'm going to be learning that tomorrow. I'll probably go to bed with the rulebook tonight, practicing it tomorrow, and then tomorrow night I'll be doing a live playthrough. So for you, that's already on the channel, go and check that out. I also have the how to play video for Voidfall, which, as I say, cross fingers, is done and ready, and that will be going live on Thursday. Should be Thursday, unless somebody finds some kind of error with it now that I need to fix. But even then, I think I've still got time to make it live Thursday. So the how to play video for Voidfall, it is 1 hour and 3 minutes long. And I know what you're thinking. I ain't got time for that. I'm not going to watch a video that's 1 hour and 3 minutes long. That's way too long. Well, it's a complex game. And I cover the game and I cover it in detail and I use lots of examples. Personally, I'm really happy with the video. I think it's an extremely good video, and I'm saying that not as somebody who's arrogant and big-headed. I'm saying that because I think I've done a really good job with the video. And a big thank you to all of the people who have helped me with the final checking of the video, to Brendan, to Marcel, and everybody else who's had a good check of the video and helped me spot just tiny little errors here and there that are fixed. Because without your help, I wouldn't have been able to do it. But very excited about that, because as I mentioned earlier on, Voidfall is my favourite game of this year. Yeah, that's going live soon. And yeah, this video log will be also going live. Coming up next month, there's a lot going on next month. And next month is going to be very, very busy. More Voidfall. So on the 11th of August, there is going to be a 3-player playthrough that will be a live stream in the evening, Thursday night, 11th of August. Set your calendars, set your reminders. If you are busy, cancel it. If you were going to work, phone in sick. 3-player live playthrough Voidfall on the 11th of August. Later on in the month, I will be doing a solo playthrough, but I need to speak to Mark Dainty because we need to schedule when we're going to do that. I don't actually have a date in my diary yet, but I need to get that in at some point in August. On Monday next week, the designer of Midhalla is going to be teaching me how to play, and we're going to be doing a playthrough that will be recorded. But I won't be making that video live until the Kickstarter goes live. So that's Midhalla, which is a game coming up, going to be going on Kickstarter in August. And the designer's going to run me through it and show me how it plays. I've got a physical copy of the game, and he's going to be connecting to me remotely, and we're going to be doing that. That will be happening for me next Monday. I'm not quite sure exactly when we'll be releasing the video for that. Ascendancy, as I mentioned, we're going to be scheduling another play, a proper playthrough of Ascendancy, which this time will be a live stream, and hopefully no technical issues. I'm going to be covering the solo mode for Marrakesh. That might actually be happening, I can't remember which day I've booked in for that. 13th of August. Yeah, 13th of August. I've got that booked in. There's going to be more Aeon Trespass Odyssey. In fact, I've got 4 more sessions of Aeon Trespass Odyssey. You can see how excited I am to play this game more. If I could take a month off and just play Aeon Trespass Odyssey, I would. This is a game, or even just a weekend, just sit there and just play through as much of the campaign. As I mentioned earlier on, I haven't been this excited to play a game for a very long time, and it's because of everything about it and the narrative and everything else. Anyway, there's going to be, ideally, 4 more streams for Aeon Trespass Odyssey. Again, these will be private streams for Patreon supporters because it'll be webcam at Rick's house. I'm supposed to be covering a game called The Warp. That is booked in for the 18th of August, but the copy that was on its way to me somehow went missing. So I don't know what's happening with that one. I've told the publisher, apparently they've sent another one, but they haven't given me any tracking numbers. So cross fingers. I've heard it's good. I've heard it's Twilight Imperium Light. It's a Space 4X game, but very different from Voidfall. So if it arrives, I should be covering that. I'm going to be covering later in the month a game, another game from WizKids. These are all sponsored videos. Well, no, Aeon Trespass Odyssey is not. These other ones are sponsored. Black Alert, which is the first board game set in the world of Star Trek Discovery. So Star Trek Discovery is a Star Trek TV series that's on Paramount Plus, I think. It's had four seasons. I've watched the first three of them. And this is the first board game that's set in Star Trek Discovery. And it's a team-based game. So I think I've got four people for the game, and it's going to be 2v2. And one group are on the Discovery, and the other group are on another ship. And I can't quite remember what's happening. But yeah, that's going to be happening end of the month. And then finally, at the end of August, just before we disappear off on honeymoon, I'm going to be recording a playthrough of a game called Dragon's Dawn, which the designer contacted me and said, Paul, I've got a game, it's Dragon's Dawn, it's inspired by Magic Realm. Magic Realm, if you don't know about Magic Realm, go and look it up on Board Game Geek. Magic Realm is a very, very old game, which is huge, massively complex, almost unplayable, but Mage Knight was inspired a bit by Magic Realm. Well, I'm saying that. I don't know if it actually was or not, but a lot of people said that. Anyway, this is a new game. It's called Dragon's Dawn. Mr. B Games are going to be the publisher, but the designer contacted me about it, and I'm going to be doing some content at the end of August. I don't know when that content is going to go out. It might be another one where I record the playthrough with them, and then the video sits there waiting for a time when they want it released. But anyway, there's a lot going on in August that I'm going to be really, really looking forward to. It is going to be very, very busy in August. My August calendar is extremely busy, which is a little bit worrying, because as well as all of that stuff, I should be starting work on the videos for Aeon Trespass Odyssey. And again, like I said earlier on, don't expect to see them anytime soon. There's going to be a lot of script writing. There's going to be a lot of planning and a lot of script writing before I even turn on the camera. That's just how it is. Right, moving on. Let's do a Patreon update. As always, a huge thank you to everybody who supports me on Patreon, whether you are one of the new supporters or whether you've been with me for a while. Right now, we have, well, we reached in July, we got to a massive 1,034 supporters, which is just astonishing. I'm continued to be blown away by the support that I get on Patreon. So yeah, huge thank you to all of you. As of this morning, it has dropped to 1,010, even though nobody's left. Patreon has done its normal thing. 24 people have disappeared because credit cards have expired. So this is my monthly polite reminder that if you have had a new card recently and you are one of my Patreon supporters, then Patreon has the very bad habit of not actually telling you this. So on my screen, you're showing as declined because it can't take the monthly payment, but Patreon sometimes doesn't actually tell you about it. So if you've had a new card recently and you're one of my Patreon supporters, please pop on. Check your Patreon account. Thank you very much for that. The Patreon funds, obviously, it's fantastic, the amount of Patreon support. And going back to the fact that I give all of the advertising revenue from all of my videos to charity, it works out about £700-£750 a month from ad revenue that I make. And all of that goes to charity. And everybody that I've spoken to about this said, Paul, you don't need to do that. You don't need to do that. Nobody else does that. You should either keep it for yourself or keep half yourself. I don't need to. And the reason I don't need to is because of the Patreon support. You cannot put a cash value on the good feelings and the karma, if you believe in that sort of thing, that I get from the fact that I donate all of my ad revenue to charity. That makes me feel good. And I'm only able to do that because the financial support from the Patreon supporters is enough money for me. I don't need the advertising revenue. So the fact that I can do some good by giving it to charity every month, it's great. Yeah. And I can't do that without you. If I only had half of the Patreon supporters that I had, I wouldn't be able to do that. I would have to take that as part of my income, but I don't need to. So that's down to you. Thank you very much for doing that. I've also bought a new camera. which is there right now. And a big thank you to Derek from Kanji Studios for talking me through and helping me make a decision on which camera to buy. And to all of the other people over the last year or so that I have asked for help on what new camera should I buy and then never actually did it. Because I've been thinking about buying a new camera for ages, but then eventually I just got so fed up and annoyed and I went, I've just got to make a decision. And I was watching one of Derek's streams because he has his own YouTube channel where he does lots of live streams and the quality was fantastic. And I said, Derek, just tell me what camera you've got and I'm going to buy the exact same one. And he did. And I did. So that's it. So again, that's where the Patreon funds go, is that I will upgrade things by buying new cameras. And if you saw the painting stream that I did, if you saw the live painting stream that I did, that was using the new camera sort of mounted about here, right over. And it was really, really good quality. On screen now is a list of all of the Patreon supporters that joined in July. So yeah, a big thank you to everybody who joined in July. That's a huge list of people. We did have a large number of people that left in July for various reasons, which is, you know, totally understandable with how things are at the moment. But yeah, these are all of the people that joined the Patreon in July. So yeah, big thank you to all of you. That's pretty much everything, apart from just a little bit of personal news, which I want to tag on to the end. Getting married on Friday. A lot of you know this already because I've not made any secret about it, but it's Friday. It's, what day is it now? Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 3 days from now. So 3 days from now, I will be married. Vicky has been working tirelessly for weeks, every day, every evening, all weekends on getting everything ready. I've done a little bit, but nothing compared to what she's done. We're hoping for good weather, but the way that the UK is at the moment is just rain, 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 rain. But, you know, that's just one of those things. It's outside of our control. But yeah, getting married on Friday. So as I say, I've not been making a secret of this. I have mentioned it in a few places, a few occasions. So a big thank you to everybody who has passed on their well wishes. And let's just hope the day goes okay. I mean, I've got stuff to do tonight after this, after recording this video, and then more stuff to do tomorrow and more stuff to do Thursday. Then we're going away for a couple of days, but Vicky's got a couple of days off after that. But unfortunately, because of some rescheduling conflicts that I had, I'm going to be back to work pretty much on the Monday. It's just how things is. But yeah, that's happening this Friday. It's a little scary, but also very exciting, and I'm really looking forward to it. So, right, let's wrap things up. Thank you very much to everybody for watching. And as I've said a few times, big thank you to all of my Patreon supporters for making these videos possible. And that's everything. I'll see you all next time. Take care. Cheers. Bye-bye.